One of your questions related to what can you do after a training course like this ends to keep yourself motivated, motoring on track, because the culture will suck you back into its normal ways. And this was a question that came up for me in the early years of teaching students, when I didn't really know how you taught NLP because it was all brand new. And yet I noticed that some students consistently were doing far better than other students, were getting more from it, seemed to take it and just apply it immediately, and then started teaching me what did and didn't work. And I went, what's going on here? And I realized that either I thought these people were just somehow genetically gifted, or, you know, some stereotype like that. And I thought, no, wait a sec, you don't know that, John, that's an assumption. These people are probably doing something different to most of your students. The question is what? And I suddenly got one of those ahas, you know, the blindingly obvious, but only when you realize it, go model them. Now, I just want to check, I've not talked you through this before, because I've talked it through with a number of different groups and I lose track. Okay, so I went and modelled. In my memory, it was 6 or 7 students over a couple of years or so. They were the high flyers. And I was just getting real curious and looking for what they were doing that was different to what everybody else was doing and what they were doing in common. And lo and behold, the further I went in, the more I found they all seemed to be doing very similar things in common. Basically, would you like to know what they were doing? I certainly wanted to know, because then I could apply it myself. Well, there were a number of different things. I'll outline them very briefly. And I gave them a name after a while, after these 4 or 5 major patterns and processes became clear. I thought of them as a kind of personal evolution process. It was a process that they were all using to accelerate their own personal development or personal evolution. And I think I got the idea of personal evolution rather than development because one or two of them mentioned it, unusual way to use the word, and they'd been reading people like Wilbur, who was very good on stages of consciousness. So the first one was, they needed a compass to navigate life, and the compass they chose was what they all called core values. You'll have heard of values, you'll have heard of core values. Values is just what's important to you. They sat themselves down and they spent time looking at what was important to them, not last time they thought about it, but right now in their life, right now with everything that's going on in your life right now. They would put down at least 5 things, never more than 10. But the thing that, and that's quite unusual to actually write it down, and it's very different to just thinking about it, but they went a step further. They wrote them down and they put them in rank order. If I had to let go of one of these top 5, which one would I let go of first? And they did that until they got 5 in rank order. And I said, isn't that a bit over the top? You know, why are you doing that? Well, it's quite easy, John. If you get them in rank order, it lets you prioritize stuff. And I said, what do you mean? Tell me more. They said, well, for example, I've got a little card I carry in my pocket that is about the purpose of my life. We'll get to that one in a second. And they said, the purpose of my life is grounded in my core values. So the core values have to be pretty spot on, otherwise the purpose will start drifting off. Okay. And I was just really struck. I think more than half of them had a little card in their pocket saying the purpose of my life is. And that, in fact, was the second one right there. So one thing led to another. So they all realized that not only was it important to recognize what's important in your life and put them in rank order as a way of conscious mind getting as clear as it can, but also use that to make up a life purpose for yourself. Now, the belief is nobody else can do this for you. Only you, by looking inside of yourself, can get clearer on what on earth might be your purpose or your best purpose in being born into this country, this culture, this time. You know, it's what are you here for? It's the question that's been central to philosophies and religions for as long as people have been asking questions. What are we here for? Well, this is the personal version. What are you here for? And they didn't let themselves off the hook until they got something they were pretty comfortable with. Would you like to know how they did that? It's kind of simple, but and not. Simple but not easy, I think, is the phrase. The simple bit is you write down. You write down, the purpose of my life is. And then, and this is the hard part, you complete the sentence. You make up something and you write it down. And of course, it's not right. But you get anything out, you write it down, because once you've written it down, you know how to improve it. You go, no, that's not right. It doesn't capture fun, or that doesn't capture service, or that doesn't capture excitement, or whatever. Therefore, you have a second go. No, that's not right. Doesn't capture so-and-so. You have a third go. The good news is, by the time you get up to 50, 5-0, you'll probably be spot on. Now, some of you laugh. You've obviously had a go at this. That's what it's like. It's a game you play with yourself. There is no shortcut. There is no easy answer. It's successive approximation. Each version is just a bit better and it's just capturing something else. And when you get it, it's just a wonderful feeling. You get a kind of hit of congruence. You go, yeah, that's it. That does it. And you know what it means. It might sound barking mad to other people, but to you, it's got all the right nuances and all the right framing. You go, yeah, that's it. It may be different in a year's time or 10 years' time, but actually, that's the compelling life purpose at the moment. The trouble is, nobody else can tell it you. Only you can work it out. And in all of these things, they were at pains to say, look, John, it's not in understanding this stuff, that's the Booby Prize, it's in doing it. Okay, so I went off and I did it. And actually, that's what I want you to do in a minute. I want you to, first of all, have a go at five values and try and put them in a rank order. And then I want you to have a go at a life purpose statement, or at least run through the first few, so you've started the process. You're not going, oh, it's impossible, or it's so easy, it's not worth doing. But before you have a go at it, are there any questions about just those first two stages, the core life value stuff and the life purpose? Yeah.
I was kind of trying it on as you were doing the first bit in terms of the values, right?
Wow.
And I started to have a little internal argument with myself.
Yeah.
Because I put up there family, love, health, money, fulfillment, da da da. As soon as you said rank them, now, I put money, and I went, oh, that's not very good, is it? Should I have that one as number one? So I started an internal argument with myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's my, conscious, slapping my unconscious, going, my unconscious is going, that's important to you. My conscious is going, well, it's a bit selfish, isn't it? So I just kind of wanted to know how you get to a stage where actually you're being honest with yourself and writing them down properly.
Well, you'll be pleased to hear that you get to the stage of being honest with yourself and writing out something that works by doing exactly what you did. You have these arguments with yourself. You go, okay. Is it money? Is it fame? Is it love? Is it integrity? What? And it's what they call a non-trivial question. And you'll only get an answer to it when you engage both your conscious mind thinking about it, as you self-evidently did, and your unconscious mind coming up with stuff as your conscious goes, well, is money more important than love? Or, you know, you get yourself sort of snarled up like that. Get your unconscious in it. Go, unconscious mind, which is more important to me? And then a new thought comes up. Well, does money buy you love? Does love buy you money? Or something weird. And you say, oh, actually, no, it's this way around. And I can't do that work for you, and neither can anybody else, because it is full of contradictions. But they are spot-on contradictions, which is what makes them so phenomenally powerful. Good. Have we talked before about Ken Wilber and his stages of consciousness? No. Okay. I think that's a really important part of the picture. And maybe I'll do a brief version of it here. Let's see. I think it goes like this. In our simple model of things, there's childhood, there's adulthood. I'm tempted to say, and then you go to heaven. There's some simplistic model. When you actually look at human development more closely, and the reason I like Ken Wilber is he looked at 200 different models of human development from the East and mystical roots, from the West and science roots, And he patched together the common elements from 200 different approaches to what are the stages of human development. And he came home with something quite useful. In fact, I'll show you the visual that I like. This was my attempt to try and summarize his 10 or more books into just one flip. It goes that there are childhood stages. I've called them the pre-personal stages. The normal adulthood is the personal development, and the transpersonal is beyond what's considered normal stages of development, the more spiritual domains or whatever you call them. And he came out, and this is not his language. His language is very complicated. That if you take childhood, that those pre-personal stages, there is early, there is mid, and there are late stages of childhood. And there are noticeable stages that kids go through. An example of a mid-stage one would be if you took a child of 5 or 6 years of age and you showed them one side of something and said, that is black, showed them another side of something and said, that is white, and flipped it around a few times and said, which colour am I seeing? Up to a certain age, they will tell you black. Beyond a certain age, white. Can you see it? Second position, right there. Cognitive development is one of Piaget's classic stages of concrete operations, if I remember my psychology correctly. And each of these stages does have kind of marker things like that. There is a very real thing happens that makes that stage substantively different to the stage before. Now, it includes the stage before, but it adds a new layer to it, which changes it. Now, when you take that and apply it to the classic three stages of adulthood, in early stage adulthood, this is often characterized by quite fixed beliefs about how things are. So Frank, I'm going to relate this back to what you said. Necessarily, we come from a place of fixed beliefs. This is how things are, early stage adulthood. Life doesn't quite fit. So for, I don't know, half the population or more, you eventually are going to break out of that fixed stage. It's like life just doesn't fit into this limiting belief anymore. And it's often painful, it's often scary, because you're letting go of how you know things are. And what's the other side of that? Help! You know. And yet, when you do let go, new beliefs do drop in. So, for example, instead of a rather fundamentalist belief that there's right and there's wrong and there's black and white and the world's a simple place, you move from that to, well, actually, there's shades of grey and there's colours of a rainbow and you can view anything from any different viewpoints. So where then is this fixed reality? You've suddenly got a much more relativistic reality in the mid stages compared to the early stages. But then you go, but what's the transition from mid-stage adulthood to late-stage adulthood? Well, as a caricature, mid-stage adulthood is the level of the people that run our organisation. So it's pretty much the level our mainstream culture works at. It's quite sophisticated compared to the fundamental stuff. But notice the fundamental stuff has had a bit of a fashionable increase recently. But you can play this game, the mid-stage adulthood, until you get to the point where it breaks. You go, wait a sec, I've been all reasonable and I've respected all the different viewpoints and I've been progressing my career and doing all the right things, and it's not working for me. I'm not only not happier, I'm not only more fulfilled, I feel like I'm going backwards, I just want out of here. You know, it's occurred again. Suddenly the beliefs no longer fit. You have to pop. And it's painful because you have to let go and you don't know what's beyond. Except you do know what's beyond. When you read the literature, you go, oh. So, for example, when you move from mid-stage to late-stage adulthood, you start paying attention to the stuff that goes wrong in your life. And you go, what am I meant to learn from this? Why have I got ill when I went away on holiday? Or why do I keep getting irritated with my wife when she or he does blah, blah, blah? And this is the beginning of learning from the stucknesses, if you like, the uncomfortable places. So suddenly this business of, actually, I'm not ready to go there because it's uncomfortable, goes into reverse. You suddenly go, wait a sec, if I don't head for this uncomfortable stuff, it's going to be ruling my life for the rest of my life. Do I want that? Now, I'm not saying you should go either way. I am saying there's a choice about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier if you read the works of people who have been before than if you try and invent it all on your own. So, for example, on this training, you'll have been taking the problems that you've experienced and using language and skills to find ways of transforming those. So that what was painful becomes learnings and lessons, and you grow in that process. Now, you do a lot of those going through the late stage transition, because actually, and I don't know if this is strictly true, but I think one of the aims is to clear up most of your major life lessons. So you're not staying mired in them. You go, yeah, that's that lesson. Okay, I've learned not to be precious about that, or whatever it is, and you move on. Now, what's also interesting about this transition from mid-stage adulthood to late-stage adulthood is there's a shift in values. And the most obvious shift is at mid-stage adulthood, material values or extrinsic values are still major. I've got to prove my worth. I've got to own a proper house, be seen, be dressed properly, a proper car, you know, show I've made it, etc. At late stage, the shift is from material and extrinsic values to immaterial, intrinsic values. People often describe it as people stuff. I've realised no amount of material stuff is going to make me happy. It's the relationships in my life that are going to make me happy, if anything does. You'll grow out of that one too, but we're not there yet. So can you see, there's a lot of major transitions happen at that stage. And you get an equivalent when you get this shift from late stage adulthood. Now, late stage adulthood is no more than 10% of the adult population in this territory. This territory does not exist for most people. Perhaps the reason why most people won't want to, quote, do NLP is it's obviously weird and scary stuff from some advanced domain we know nothing of. Well, why would we go there? It's a cult when viewed from this viewpoint. Some people at this level will go, oh, it's interesting, let's explore. But a lot of them will go, no, thank you. You can now see why. Yeah. And the last bit I'll say on this is, you know, you've got a foot in the transpersonal and the early stages of the transpersonal when you find yourself actually getting into and beginning to do meditational practice, mindfulness practice, whatever version it is, of just stopping, putting a value on, becoming aware of those inner thoughts, the endless internal dialogue, learning how to stop it. And when you stop it, you get to be in the now, as Eckhart Tolle and the other great teachers say. And that becomes not just an aspiration, it becomes quite compelling, and you find yourself spending, even if it's only 10 or 20 minutes a day, it's enough to make a difference.
It's quite scary. It's like my purpose is, my life is to be in the present and to live in the now.
Well, so you've got a pathway.
It is a bit scary.
Yeah. Now look, bear in mind with this life purposey stuff, you decide how fast you do or don't head towards it, and you don't have to do it at all. It's really important to have that be a choice, because a lot of people go, but I've got to develop, therefore I'm going to make myself develop, and you can see how that's going to snarl up. That's conscious, unconscious warfare right there. So you must only do it at whatever rate is appropriate for you, and only if you want to. So there's nuancing around this. But look, when you are doing these daily practices, that really does seem to take a lot of the pressure off. And the evidence from the mindfulness movement, which has really sold meditation to the mainstream culture, it's now got to Parliament, I believe. I think a quarter of MPs now do mindfulness training. God bless them, and I hope it makes a difference. Yeah. Right, I'm done so far if you are. Ready for the next bit? So the next bit is life planning. All the folks I modelled did a version of it. They did slightly different versions, but they did all divide their life into some number of areas, sometimes five areas, most often seven, God knows why. And then they would divide their life into three time frames, most often three. So how do you do that? Well, life areas, you just take your life, which is like one cake, and you arbitrarily cut it up into seven bits. It doesn't matter what's in the bits, you do the cutting. I don't bother to think about it too much anymore. I usually make sure the way I cut my cake up this time is different to how I did it a year ago. So if I was obsessed with money because I didn't have enough, then money would be one of my life things. If I wasn't obsessed with money, then it would be maybe it's about career directions or something. So there's no rights and wrongs. You divide your life. But once you've got five or seven areas down, I write them down the left side of the page and put lines between each one so I can focus on each bit. Then top of the page, I put my three time frames. Most often they'll recommend things like 1 month, 1 year, 5 years. Actually, pick your own. I've had most success when I brought the near time frame in to at least a month, if not a week, because a month is long enough I forget all about it and lose the plot entirely. But you decide. It's like, what's going to be useful to you? If you're very interested in what's happening in your life right now, pull them all forwards. When I did retirement stuff, I did one that went out to the end of life, because that was appropriate for that. So you choose. But three different time frames. Do make sure the first one is close enough that it is going to bite into your life, because if it doesn't engage with your life, it's not going to do very much for you. So you've got in front of you a sheet of paper. Down the left-hand side is 5 to 7 main areas of your life that you're interested in. On the top are the three time frames. What you do then, again, it's simple, but it doesn't always work out being easy. You take the first area of your life and you take the first time frame. Suppose I'm in friendships and in 1 month time, and suppose I'm feeling a bit like I've been ignoring my friendships. And perhaps I ought to think about this. So I go, okay, John, in 1 month, what's the issue? Or what's the outcome that would actually make a difference to friendships? So it's issue or outcome. They don't have to be the same. I just want an entry point, something to be working with. Most of the models I know don't have that. They usually say you must set your outcomes and then you must try and achieve them, which is a bit of a setup for failure. So it can be either an issue or an outcome. Whatever you think is most leveraged is most likely to make a difference and get you doing something different. And you write it down in that box. Now, while I'm doing the 1 month ones, I often drop them into my diary as well. I'll drop in something in a week just to remind me, because knowing me, I'll have lost the plot by then and got distracted. So the purpose of this life plan is not that it's all going to turn out the way you expect. The purpose is to identify leverage change points in your life that you then get interested in and work with through reflection and reflective journaling, or through one-to-ones anytime you feel stuck. So this is stuff to work with that you think will make a difference. And I have been thinking I've been neglecting my friendships a bit recently, and it's interesting, just lining up the issue, I'm going, oh yeah, I really must contact so-and-so. It's starting to happen. And that's what this stuff does. But look, there's a hazard to it. Your conscious tiny mind will get hold of it and will try and make you do these things. Guess what happens then? Your unconscious mind typically goes, no, it won't. Your conscious mind then beats yourself up for being a complete failure again. You know, so it'll play into your own pathologies if you let it. The thing I learned from these people, they were very clear that was the danger, and they said, I'm not doing that. These life plans are simply intentions. I'm not attached to them. I don't mind which way they pan out, but I am absolutely fascinated to know what are the key areas in my life that I feel like I should be paying most attention to. Can you hear the difference? So if you teach somebody this at early stage adulthood, they'll set rigid outcomes and beat themselves up every time they fail, and then they'll abandon it. A lot of the population have tried that. This is late stage adulthood. You set either outcomes or issues. They're just things that are going to make a big difference to you. And you get curious about them, and you're not attached to results. You just try different things until you see what seems to make a difference. It'll break you out of obsessing over, this is my life issue, I'm an inadequate person, and I'll never be anything else, or whatever the stuff is. So, no attachment to these. but it's just a game you play with yourself. You do the same for the first life area in the second time period and the first life area in the third time period. You write down one issue or one outcome that you think would make the most difference. And then you go through the other areas. I think that's it. Feed them into a daily journal, otherwise they will get filed in a drawer and you'll forget all about it. So it's got to somehow interact with your everyday life. I might put down a goal and think, what's one that's real for me? Well, actually, this friendship thing, I have been a bit negligent. I love being off on my own. So I will put something in my journal, but it might be at the level, I'm curious to know who I want to reach out to next. Because there's various people I've just faded, I've let go of, but they're still with me. And so that's different to saying, I'm going to contact Tim because he never got back to me. If I go, I'm going to contact Tim because he never got back to me, and I don't, I would typically, at mid-stage, then beat myself up for not doing it. And then start beating myself and then start generalising. John, you never do anything you say you're going to do. You're as rubbish as your wife says you are. Or whatever it's, you know. Off you go, into your stuff. Unattachment means, I'm curious about that. I'd like to contact him. I wonder if I will or not. And I really don't mind if I do or not. And oddly enough, that probably means I will. But there's no pressure on me by me. Does that make unattachment? The more I do unattachment, I mean, most people do, the more you learn to, I don't know how to say it other than the more you learn to trust the universe is a friendly place, despite all the evidence to the contrary. You know, plenty of evidence the universe is not a friendly place. But if you live experientially in a friendly universe, the universe gets friendlier. I guess we're just talking self-fulfilling prophecies. But, you know, it's a fundamental question, and hence that lovely story when I tell you about the one when Aldous Huxley got together with Albert Einstein, and Huxley, being a bright lad, says to Einstein, what's the most useful question to ask? And Einstein goes inside, and his eyes move around, and comes out a little bit later and says, is the universe a friendly place? Because you will live in a universe that is either friendly or unfriendly. But if you can get into a friendly universe, it really does change everything. It's a bit like the psychotherapist over generations saying, trust the process. You know, you either trust or you don't. And there's something fundamental about that. And there's times when you don't feel like trusting and don't want to, and yet to be able to is just such a relief. You know, including biggies. Try this for a question. Is death safe? That pushes quite a few buttons in this culture. But actually, death must be the ultimate safe place because nobody can ever get to you ever again. All is peace. All is done. That's not the common view of death in this culture. So, look, I need to move on. So where are we? We're going through these personal even processes. We've got core values. We've got life purpose. We've got this framework of life planning. Daily practices is what brings this into being. And of these, perhaps the main one is reflective journaling. And I just use a little A5 ring-bound book and I scribble down whatever's around. And a lot of it's waffle, and some of it is very relevant and spot on. But it's a ritual I do every day. It's a practice. It takes me 10 minutes, 15 minutes. When something is going on in my life, like I had a little financial wobble a few months ago. I do it quite regularly, little financial wobbles. And it showed up in my journal. And it turned out there were things I could do about it. I'd lost track of my balance in the bank account. I'd lost track of pension investment stuff and so on. And I did some stuff. I didn't for a few days. I procrastinated, but it stayed with me and it kept showing up in the journal. John, you're still feeling a bit financially wobbly. Are you going to do anything about it? And I just played that game with myself. And then I did. And I set up an appointment. I saw the pension guy and so on. It's all fine, hunky-dory. But that's typical of what happens. Whatever's getting to you, you write it down and any action you might take, and you either will or won't take it in the next day or so. And if you don't and it matters, it'll show up again and you'll try it differently. Is this making sense? Mm-hmm. So you're working with yourself on your issues directly. You will get stuck because of blind spots and glass ceilings. That's when you need the one-to-ones. That's when you need supervision. That's when you go to a dear friend that you can talk anything through with, because you won't do it on your own. You'll get stuck in your own reality. So it turns out that talking stuff through with other people is a necessary part of the journey. It's like the talk therapy idea. Just talking it out changes it. Just writing it down changes it. I'm slightly suspicious that not writing it down doesn't change it. Tiny mind goes round and round in the same circles. So they would write stuff down. They would do other stuff. So the reflective journaling's key. Meditation. They all either did meditation or they had an hour a day of doing something that was non-purposeful behaviour. It could be walking the dog in the woods, it could be lying in the bath listening to classical music, take your pick, but it was not purposeful behaviour. So forget about outcomes, this is being, not doing. Arguably, it's the only hour in the day where you get to be a human being rather than a human doing, but that's for you to decide. They would feed their mind with books, audios, online stuff, whatever's around. They'd noticed food, exercise, and gently work with that. They wouldn't give themselves too hard a time, but they were on an improving trend for both, because actually, balanced life needs all of that stuff. And they did these things, and they said they made a difference. Whilst they were learning NLP, they did do practice groups, and long after they were learning NLP, they did what I'm calling one-to-one. Call it co-coaching, co-counseling, whatever label is around for it, but working with somebody else on who has similar skill levels to you on stuff that really matters and makes a difference. Having that in their life, they all said, was essential, because otherwise you just get burnt out. The only other thing I would add to this is they all said, look, although you will tend to forget about it, you do need to go back to core values, life purpose, life planning, at least a few times a year, because you will have developed enough that actually it's out of date. You're running on an old model. Oh, and one last piece. I pinned them down on, because I wasn't clear, how does doing a daily journal get you to actually change your behaviour? And they all said the same thing. They said, look, if a problem has come up, and they'd give an example, where I need to do something different. They would put it in their journal, you know, sort admin file, whatever it is, and the following day it hadn't happened. So they go, okay, that's interesting, I'm procrastinating again. I wonder how, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just do the first 2 minutes worth of it and set that up, and either that works or it doesn't. So they change how they're approaching it until it works. Of course, when you do the first 2 minutes, you tend to get into it and end up doing half an hour before you know it. So they were working with themselves. But the point was this, if they kept not doing it, they would go back into the time when they might do it, and they would mentally rehearse different approaches until they got a version that worked. And that was central to all of them. If anything didn't work, if they're having a hard time with a person or a problem or anything, they would mentally rehearse different approaches. Guess how many options they liked to give themselves, folks? Live long and prosper. Yeah, three. And some of them have got the same story. And I got it from my teacher, and it was, if you have no choices, you're dead. If you have one choice, you're stuck. If you have two choices, you're in a dilemma. If you have three choices, you're up to choice. That's the least that can be called real choice. And I didn't like that either and resisted it, but it turned out to be invaluable. So they would mentally rehearse different ways of doing something until they got a version that worked, and then it stopped being a problem. And they did this day after day after day. Is it any wonder they ended up a bit impressive? One of them was IBM Chief Problem Solver Europe. This was the time when IBM ruled supreme, you know, long before Windows and everything else. And IBM didn't half have some big messes in Europe. And they sent Paul in to deal with them. And he just loved doing it. He's like a kid with a game. And I remember unpacking his belief systems because I was in awe of this. He said, well, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen, John? They'll fire me. I'm fine with that. I don't mind if they fire me. I'm quite happy to do something else. But just at the moment, I enjoy solving complex problems because I enjoy what I learn from doing it. And he did. He got a buzz and he was charming and he was funny and he was really bright. And I'm not surprised they employed him and paid him a fortune, but this was the stuff that underpinned it. So if you want a framework, then that's your framework. Clear on core values, clear on life purpose, set out a life plan, don't be attached to it, bring it into your life one day at a time with reflective journaling, mentally rehearse different options until they happen, then keep moving on through.